Good morning again, everyone. I will reconvene this regular meeting of the North Dakota Public Service Commission, which was actually called to order at 10 o'clock, and we had a delay on one of the motions, and so we just immediately went into a recess. I'm Randy Christman, the chairman of the commission. Commissioner Brian Krasius and Commissioner Julie Fedorchak are with me, so we have a quorum. And again, just for the record, it's now 10:19 a.m. on Wednesday, September 20th, 2017. And I have some brief opening comments, but I'm not going to do them at the opening. I'm going to hold them off until one of my agenda items where I think they fit better. So, Commissioner Krasius, do you have any opening comments?
Just wanted to say good morning. It was a busy past several weeks have been busy. I had the opportunity to go and listen to the President, President Trump, speak out at Endeavor.
And, thank you, Dave. I'll start over again. Well, good morning. I said it's been a busy couple of weeks. As mentioned, I had the opportunity to go and listen to President Trump speak at Endeavor, and formerly known as Tesoro, and I thought it was a very good speech in terms of how it applied to North Dakota. So that and just the opportunity to actually be close and to witness the President of the United States, regardless of their political affiliation, it's a part of our democracy, and that was very a very impressive event and great to be a part of. And then to top it off, toward the end of the week, I actually went to North American Coal and toured their three mines several weeks ago, about a week and a half ago. So I was able to do that, and we have an agenda item related to the lignite industry that we'll be talking about. But one thing that I was just incredibly impressed with as I was touring the grounds were the reclamation efforts. Absolutely a fantastic job. Coal Lake was in the background, and it was very difficult to pick out what had been mined versus what hadn't been mined. So from a reclamation standpoint, the industry is doing a fantastic job in the state, and it was good to get out and see the facilities.
Commissioner Fedorchak.
Well, good morning, everyone. I see that my colleague has gotten a little additional decoration up here, so I think I need to put my gnome up a little higher.
You could wear the helmet.
Yellow helmet down there. So, nice addition, Brian. It's good to be here this morning. We have an exciting addition to the agenda item that came just literally 2 minutes before 10, and I'll be adding that when we actually have copies of the motion and everything, and when it's my time to talk later. But so for opening comments, I just wanted to briefly highlight one of the items on the agenda today is in Brian's portfolio, and it relates to a tariff that we're going to be starting to look at for the Gwinner Pipeline, which is the natural gas line that's being extended to the Bobcat facility. And tomorrow in Gwinner, there's a huge celebration of highlighting that new project and what it means to Gwinner and to the Bobcat facility out there in terms of getting them natural gas. And so I just wanted to highlight that a little bit because it's on our agenda too. So what the tariff will do is allow other customers to access that line and provide new customers an opportunity to have natural gas service. So it really opens up the door for a lot of industrial, value-added agriculture, and residential potential use in that region. They have about 65,000 decatherms available annually on that line. Bobcat is using 185,000, and the pipe has a 250,000 capacity. So it really is a great opportunity for that whole area, and I'm looking forward to going down there for that that celebration. It really illustrates, though, this whole project, the importance of having an anchor tenant to drive this sort of development. It's really challenging to get natural gas communities without something like that when you look at how much of that natural gas is going to be used by the Bobcat facility and how long it took to get this deal together, even with the strong desire for Bobcat and the strong need for them for this product. So it's a huge deal for Bobcat. They've been working for years and to try to get this together, and their growth opportunities have been stagnated because of the lack of natural gas, so this is a great opportunity for them, and we're really looking forward to the next steps here at the Commission to trying to make come up with a formula that works for the company to allow other customers to access that line. So with that, I'll turn it back to the Chairman, and we can get started on the regular agenda.
Okay, before the regular agenda, we have a consent agenda with 13 items plus approval of previous meeting minutes. I move passage.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay, RC1, I move the Commission present the 2017 North Dakota Award for Excellence in Surface Coal Mining and Reclamation to BNI Coal Limited.
Second.
Our State Reclamation Award Program sets out the criteria for presenting a reclamation award at the League Night Energy Council meeting. The Reclamation Division recommends that BNI Coal be recognized for its efforts to reclaim a bond-released inert waste disposal facility. Mining years ago resulted in a final pit that was subsequently developed into an inert waste disposal facility, primarily for bottom ash by Minn Kota Power Cooperative. The waste disposal facility was permitted by the North Dakota Department of Health, and the 68-acre facility was eventually bond released because it was no longer a mining operation. It was to be a waste facility. The bond release occurred in 2004. However, shortly after it was permitted by the Department of Health, Minn Kota developed a commercial market for the bottom ash, thus negating the need for the inert waste disposal facility. So very little bottom ash disposal ever took place in the facility, and it was ultimately abandoned. And several years ago, Minn Kota made the decision to close and reclaim the facility and solicited BNI Coal's help in designing a closure and reclamation plan for this inert waste disposal facility that was developed and barely used. Closure of the facility, though, would require bringing the disposal pit to a final grade similar to the adjacent land area. Prior to bond releasing that waste disposal facility, an adequate volume of topsoil and subsoil was set aside for the closure and reclamation of this disposal facility once it reached capacity. However, only a small volume of overburden was set aside for the cap because the assumption was that the pit would be filled to capacity with bottom ash and then capped with a thin layer of overburden prior to respread of topsoil and subsoil. So the challenge of developing a closure plan was finding a source of approximately 2.8 million cubic yards of fill and to maintain drainage patterns and watersheds within the reclaimed area. The 2.8 million, I want to emphasize that number because I'm going to divide it up here, but of course the total 2.8 million would be what was intended to be the ash that would have been disposed there in the original plan. So BNI developed a plan to use approximately 1 million yards of spoil material from nearby mine areas, nearby about 1 to 2 miles away, and to redisturb adjacent reclaimed areas to obtain the other 1.8 million cubic yards of borrow materials to backfill this open pit. The plan resulted in redisturbing about 87 acres of previously reclaimed land to obtain the 1.8 million cubic yards of spoil material. These borrow areas were within permitted areas of the mine, and they were reclaimed again now to their approval post-mine land use of cropland following the removal of the borrow material. The backfilling began in 2015, with most of the work being completed in late 2016 and the first half of this year. The project is nearly complete, with only some soil respread and vegetation activities remaining. The reclaimed facility blends well with the adjacent reclaimed areas, and the utility of the land was really greatly improved with the result of this project. Closure and reclamation of the inert waste disposal facility required development of a unique plan. Approval required coordination with the Department of Health and the Reclamation Division of our agency. The collective time, skills, and resources expended by BNI engineers, environmental specialists, planners, operations supervisors, and equipment operators to complete this project was significant. So staff believes, as do I, that BNI Coal's reclamation efforts to reclaim this disposal facility is worthy of this year's State Reclamation Award under the Mining and Reclamation Operations category.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
I would just add that any time we're removing resources, natural resources, energy resources from the ground, it's important to make sure that we leave the land in the same fashion that it was prior to those exercises being done, whether it's coal extraction, whether it's the oil and gas industry, being environmentally conscious and friendly is incredibly important. I had the opportunity earlier at the beginning of May, along with our director of Reclamation and AML, Dean, to tour BNI's facility, and similar to my comments on North American Coal, they're doing a very good job as well in terms of reclaiming the land. But really, it's industry's responsibility, and we're fortunate to have a lot of very good operators in the state that take this very seriously. Of course, our job as a regulatory body is to ensure that that's done correctly, but hats off to BNI for the work that they're doing, and I'm quite sure will continue to do.
I think this is just a quick comment. An interesting project. It's not necessarily typical of the ones that we would provide for an award, but I think it's noteworthy because the company really didn't have to do this. They went above and beyond to do this right and went back and at significant expense to make this happen and to take care of this issue. And it really resulted from a good problem, which was finding a good use for that bottom ash. So you can't blame them for planning improperly. They were planning ahead and trying to had to make accommodations for that product. Then they found a market for it and then they had a very large hole in the ground that they had to figure out what to do with. And I really am pleased with how they went about it and really did it the right way. So it's good for the landscape long term for sure.
Really a great demonstration of going way above and beyond what was required of them to be good environmental stewards.
Is there any further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay, RC2, I move the commission approve bond release number 6 for surface coal mining permit number NACT-9101 held by the Coteau Properties Company for the Freedom Mine to release all reclamation liabilities on 128.824 acres of land located in portions of Section 16 and 17 of Township 145 North, Range 87 West in Mercer County. The release will become effective October 23rd of 2017 unless a formal hearing is required.
Second.
So the land in this bond release, which is just a few miles upstream from my home place, the bond release application is owned. The land in this application is owned by the North Dakota Game and Fish Department, and it is part of the Harmony Lake Wildlife Management Area that some of you recall from some years ago. Coteau deeded this property to the North Dakota Game and Fish after creating Harmony Lake. The bond release tract adjoins previously bond release tracts that are also part of those of the same wildlife management area. The tract contains approximately 53 acres of land that was affected by Coteau and 76 acres of land that was not disturbed by any recent mining activities. When I say that, I want to point out that some of those 76 acres were disturbed by mining activities probably in the 40s or 50s or something, well beyond our regulatory time frame, though. Current law mining disturbances occurred in 1995 and in 1996. The reclamation activities occurred from 2000 to 2013. There is a road on the north side of this track that has been reconstructed by Coteau as directed by the Mercer County Road Authority. The Mercer County Commission accepted the road in its current condition and reopened the road to the public on November 14th of last year. A formal bond release inspection was conducted on November 8th of last year. There was one county commissioner, the road superintendent, several North Dakota Game and Fish representatives, the surface owners, who is the Game and Fish Department. None of them expressed any concerns with this release application. In fact, the Game and Fish Director, Terry Steinwan, sent a letter indicating his department's satisfaction with the condition of the property, and he commended Coteau for developing this area for public use. A notice of the bond release application was published in the official county newspapers, the Hazen Star and Beulah Beacon, weekly from October 20th through November 10th of last year. No objections were received. Coteau is not requesting any reduction in the bond amount. This is part of a consolidated bond area. If this release is approved, though, Coteau will be released from all reclamation liabilities on these 129 acres of land, and the bond release will become effective October 23rd of 2017 unless a formal hearing is requested.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
RC3, I move the Commission adopt the order certifying use of Federal Universal Services Support and Public Service Commission, USF Use Certification 47 CFR 54.314 for the year 2018, compliance, case number PU-17-294.
Second.
The Telecommunications Act of 1996, the Federal Telecommunications Act, requires that states that desire eligible telecommunications carriers to receive support pursuant to the high-cost program must file an annual certification with the administrator and the commission, the FCC, stating that all federal high-cost support provided to such carriers within that state was used in the preceding calendar year and will be used in the coming calendar year, only for the provision, maintenance, and upgrading of facilities and services for which the support is intended. On August 28th of 2002, this commission issued an order indicating that affidavits filed with the PSC will be the basis for the PSC's certification to the FCC. Under North Dakota law, our agency has very limited jurisdiction over rural telecommunications carriers, and the FCC in its order recognized that some states have only limited regulatory oversight and may nonetheless certify to the FCC that carriers in the state had accounted to the state commission for receipt of federal support and that the support will be used as recognized. Bottom line is, we are authorized to make this certification based on the affidavits filed by the companies. 42 eligible telecommunications carriers in North Dakota have accounted to us by affidavit that all federal support was used in the preceding year and will be used in the coming calendar year as intended. And unless asked, I will not read the 42, but I will be glad to if asked. I would just point out one of them toward the end, RC Technologies is not owned by me.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
RC4, I move the commission approve revision number 14 to surface coal mining permit number BNCR-9401 held by BNI Coal Limited for the Center Mine to delete 15.24 acres from the permit that have not been disturbed by mining activities.
Second.
On May 31st of this year, BNI submitted the application to delete these 15 and a quarter acres from this permit at the Center Mine. The tract proposed for deletion is an unleased federal coal tract. I want to emphasize the federal government owns the coal. Private ownership owns the land above it. The surface of this tract is owned by Minn Kota Power Cooperative, who operates a solid waste management facility on adjacent land. No coal was removed from this tract, and the surface was not disturbed by mining-related activities. Minn Kota is planning a landfill expansion that does not involve mining the federal coal on this tract, since BNI Coal does not have a lease for the federal coal. No coal will be mined from the federal coal tract, including that portion of the federal coal tract that will remain in the permit. Again, it's a quarter section of land. We're just taking the 15 acres out of the mine permit. The rest remains in there, but the coal will not be taken. This permit revision was not subject to the public notice requirements. However, the commission approval is required. The Bureau of Land Management and Office of Surface Mining were sent copies of the application. The Reclamation Division received a response from the OSM's Western Region Office in a July 28th of 2017 letter stating that they reviewed the application and had no concerns related to the decision to delete the unleased federal coal tract. I mentioned earlier that I had some opening comments and was going to insert them, and this is the place, because I find this to be something that merits approval but really disturbs me at its core. First of all, I want to point out that earlier we commended them for reclaiming a landfill, and now we're opening a landfill. They are completely different. They're separated by a mile or two. But this, the other would be bottom ash. This would be fly ash. This will be fly ash. And so it's a completely different type of material that goes in there, has different requirements. The lay of the land is different. The lining is different. The two, one wouldn't have worked to do the other. This is a different, more highly regulated type of waste. And this, when it is someday completed and reclaimed, it will always remain industrial, even after the reclamation. What I find so disturbing here is the fact that BNI Coal applied for this federal coal lease several years ago. And the fact that our parts of our federal government have become so bogged down that they can't make decisions reverberates in this case the fact that the mine company can't wait any longer. Minn Kota can't wait any longer. They need to expand their ash disposal site, so they're moving on with it. The coal under this quarter of land, as I mentioned earlier, it's private ownership of the land. The land is all being disturbed, so if someone thinks that dragging their feet on these things prevents this land from being mined, no one will ever know whether the coal was taken or not based on the top. It's all being disturbed. What we're doing is leaving behind millions of dollars worth of coal in a little area with all the coal mined around it, so no one will ever come back for this. The federal government stresses and does news releases and whines all the time about all the things that need to be done and fighting over money. Here they're leaving millions of dollars on the table for absolutely no good reason. And beyond that, the fact that the land didn't get mined means that now Minn Kota has to unearth everything. It is, I was told some time ago, I don't remember the numbers exactly, hundreds of thousands of dollars, maybe even more than $1 million, significant amounts of money that this will cost Minn Kota to develop this landfill that would not have had to be spent had they mined the land. And furthermore, now, since they can only make the pit as deep as the top of the coal because we can't move the coal, the pit is going to last several years less than it would have lasted had we taken the coal. And then we'll need to create another waste pit. It is such an enormously frustrating waste of money and resources. I don't know anymore what to do to get people to understand how wasteful this is, but I just thought I would take this opportunity to point it out. Our government is leaving millions of dollars on the table, and there's absolutely nothing good comes of it.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
Randy, you probably mentioned it, but how many years was this tank? Have they been waiting for this lease to be completed?
I didn't look back at the date, but I think they probably started pursuing the lease in 12, 13, something like that. It seems like it's been on the table about as long as I've been here.
Mm-hmm.
And a decision can't be reached. You know, it's just.
But there was a day when they'd get these decisions done in a matter of less than a year, if I remember correctly from our conversation with industry last week. This has just gone from, you know, a matter of a pretty routine matter or doable to being stretched out for years to the point where companies like this are just throwing their hands up and walking away from it.
A gentleman where I do remember the statistics a little better, but a gentleman at this mine who has worked several of these leases kind of in that 2005, 2007, a decade or maybe slightly more ago, did a couple of federal leases where they took just a little over a year. Mm-hmm. And I think that was probably the plan when they started this one 3-4 years before they were going to need it and found out that just a decade later, that's nowhere near enough. They weren't even anywhere close to having this done. And they need to start going somewhere with the ash. So we're just leaving millions of dollars underneath this ash pit. And the day that we need the next ash pit is much closer than it would be had we mined this coal. It's already half full of coal. Good gosh.
Is there any further discussion?
I nominate Randy for head of OMS.
Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay. I'll try and take a breath and get back down here.
I can talk about grain elevators.
RC5, I move the commission issue the order granting request to discontinue business effective September 1st, 2017 in American Bean LLC, license number 1299, Grand Forks, North Dakota, discontinue business case number GE-17-350.
Second.
On August 18th, we received a request to discontinue business from American Bean for its warehouse at Grand Forks. American Bean notified us that business is no longer conducted at this facility effective September 1st. The warehouse is empty and there are no outstanding storage obligations. American Bean continues to operate facilities at Cummings, Hamilton, Petersburg, Sharon, and Webster. And staff recommends the request be approved.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
I will point out on a more pleasant note than the last case. I named these five little towns, and you know I love knowing things about these little towns. And I'm going to emphasize two of them because they have a unique connection that will become more unique as I get to the end. Petersburg and Sharon. Petersburg is the hometown of Martin Johnson, an interesting character who was actually in both the Iowa State House of Representatives and the Iowa State Senate and was a presidential elector from Iowa, then moved to North Dakota, served in our State House of Representatives for 8 years in the 1890s, and became our left there voluntarily to run for the U.S. Senate, but was unsuccessful, then was elected in 2008 and served about 8 months in 2009 and died. Sharon, North Dakota, is the home of, and I know I'm going to get this pronunciation wrong, I went to two of my best Scandinavian resources and learned different pronunciations, but Hjalmar Nygaard, who served 12 years in our State House of Representatives, 4 years as the majority leaders, and 2 years as Speaker, then served 2 years in the U.S. House. He actually followed Quentin Burdick in that House seat and preceded Mark Andrews, who both, of course, are much more known, but, like Mr. Johnson, died in office.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
That concludes my portfolio.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not quite sure what that means in terms of dying in office. That wasn't a part of my interview.
So. Fortunately, it's rare.
Okay, for my first item, I move the commission adopt the order on consent agreement and public service commission Murphy Pipe and Civil LLC damage prevention enforcement case number PU-17-221.
Second.
On May 23rd, 2017, the commission received a North Dakota one-call complaint from Ryan Olson with Northwest Communications Co-op alleging a violation by Murphy Pipe and Civil LLC, who I'll refer to as MPC going forward, of North Dakota Century Code Section 49-23, one-call excavation notice system. On May 24th, 2017, the commission sent a letter to MPC enclosing the one-call complaint. On June 7th, 2017, MPC filed a response to the one-call complaint. And on August 28, 2017, the Public Service Commission advocacy staff and MPC filed a consent agreement. In this particular case, no one-call ticket was requested, and North Dakota Century Code Section 49-23-04 states that an excavator shall contact the notification center and provide an excavation or location notice at least 48 hours before the beginning of any excavation, and that excludes Saturdays, Sundays, and holidays unless otherwise agreed to between the excavator and operator. This particular excavator did not have any previous violations. The amount of damage was $1,020. And as a result of the investigation and the consent agreement, MPC agrees to be assessed a civil penalty of $1,000, of which $500 will be suspended for a period of 5 years, assuming no other violations occur.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
I move the commission adopt the order on consent agreement and public service commission, and speaking of pronunciations, Randy, Camphius Pipeline Company, damage prevention enforcement, case number PU-17-293.
Second.
And I apologize if I pronounce that incorrectly. On June 17th, 2017, the commission received a North Dakota one-call complaint from Mike Middleder with BEK Communications Cooperative alleging a violation by Camphius Pipeline Company of North Dakota Century Code Section 49-23, the one-call excavation notice system. On July 21st, 2017, The commission sent a letter to CAMFIUS enclosing the one-call complaint. On July 31st, 2017, CAMFIUS filed a response to the one-call complaint, and on September 5th, 2017, the Public Service Commission advocacy staff and CAMFIUS filed a consent agreement. And similar to the last case, I should say this one's actually a little bit differently. One was not calling to get an excavation ticket, the one-call ticket. In this particular case, the ticket was called in, the lines were marked, and the excavator was actually hand-digging at the time of the line strike, and it damaged a fiber optic cable. That fiber optic cable then by the excavator was taped up with what appears to be black electrical tape. We're talking a very small section, maybe 1 or 2 inches. So they taped it up and then proceeded to rebury it. But the Century Code states that if any damage occurs to an underground facility, and this is 49-2306, or its protective covering, the excavator shall notify the operator as soon as reasonably possible. North Dakota Century Code Section 49-2306 states that an excavator shall delay backfilling in the immediate area of the damaged underground facilities until the damage has been investigated by the operator, unless the operator authorizes otherwise. And the repair of that damage must be performed by the operator or by a qualified person authorized by the operator. In this particular case, the amount of damage was $7,000, and as a result, CAMFIUS agreed to be assessed a civil penalty of $10,000, $500, and remitted and agrees to remit $5,000 of the $10,500, with the remaining $5,500 civil penalty suspended on the condition that CAMFIUS commits no further violations of the North Dakota one-call law for a period of 5 years upon effective on the date of the order. And as a result, as mentioned, the consent agreement filed by CAMFIUS and advocacy staff on July 17th, 2017, the commission, the order is that this be approved. And again, with the penalty of $5,000 payable, the rest being suspended.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
I move the commission assess a filing fee of $10,000 and issue a notice of opportunity for hearing in Northern States Power Company 115 KV transmission line, Cass County, public convenience and necessity case number PU-17-332.
Second.
On August 21st, 2017, NSP filed an application for a Certificate of Public Convenience and Necessity. NSP proposes to construct a 115 kV transmission line approximately 5 miles in length between the Maple River and Red River substations in Cass County in order to improve reliability in the Fargo area. Those interested are invited to comment on the application in writing. Persons desiring a hearing must file a written request identifying their interest in the proceedings and the reasons for requesting a hearing. Comments and requests for hearing must be received by October 20th, 2017. And this is to address, as mentioned, reliability issues in the Fargo area, overloads on the transmission facilities, and also to comply with applicable reliability standards as issued by MISO. And it will also provide operational flexibility by addressing near and long-term servicing needs in the Fargo area. So this is a result of growth and in effect, the overloading of the transmission facilities, it's beginning to be pushed past its limits, and NSP is requesting that the public convenience and necessity, the opportunity for hearing be issued.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
Can someone refresh me on the guidelines of when we do a notice of opportunity for hearing as opposed to going right to hearing on a siting case like this? Because I know we've had pipelines, for example, that were shorter than this that we had hearings on that I don't know that anyone requested the hearing.
Well, in this particular case, this can fall back on the ratepayer. The estimated cost is just over $19 million. So ultimately, if the project is approved and the expansion line is placed in service, that $19 million would fall back on the ratepayer, thus giving having to or wanting to give the opportunity for any potential interveners to weigh in on it.
But
I'm sorry. That I was thinking of siting, and this is the Certificate of Public Convenience and Necessity. That's where.
Yep.
Never mind. And this is a 115, which is below the siting threshold.
Yep.
Okay. Sorry for drawing a
blank. Talked yourself right out of that question.
Is there any further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
I move the commission issue a notice of opportunity for hearing, assess a filing fee of $10,000, and suspend the tariff filing in Otter Tail Power Company Transmission Facility Cost Recovery 2018 rates, case number PU-17-340.
Second.
On August 31st, 2017, Otter Tail Power Company filed an annual update to its transmission facility cost recovery rider. The proposed rate increase for 2018 includes the costs for one new transmission project, updated electric transmission expenses with offsetting revenues, and a true-up amount from the current rate. The proposed rate adjustment to be effective for bills rendered on and after January 1st, 2018, would be as follows. For large generation services, looking at a rate per kilowatt of 0.406 for controlled service, a much smaller amount, 0.00021. For lighting service, 0.00062, and for all other service, 0.00124. So what that really means, the increase for a typical residential customer using 1,000 kilowatts per month would be $1.23 per month. For a large general service customer, the amount would be $172.55 per month, and that would be for 425 kilowatts of demand. Those interested are invited to comment on the application in writing. Persons desiring a hearing must file a written request identifying their interest in the proceeding and the reasons for requesting a hearing. Comments and requests for hearing must be received by November 7th, 2017. If deemed appropriate, the Commission can determine the matter without a hearing. And just in terms of just a little more detail on the projects. The updates are for the Big Stone South Brookings line, the Big Stone South Ellendale line, and updates for those, and the rest we'll be digging into.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay, and my final item, I move the commission assess a filing fee of $10,000, suspend the tariff and rates, and issue a notice of opportunity for hearing in Montana Dakota Utilities Company, a division of MDU Resources Incorporated, capacity reservation, Gwinner Pipeline tariff and rates, case number PU-17-346.
Second.
On September 7th, 2017, Montana Dakota Utilities Company, a division of MDU Resources, filed an application to implement a capacity reservation change on their Gwinner pipeline. The proposed tariff and associated rates would be applicable to any customer taking service either directly or through the connection to the Gwinner pipeline. Those interested are invited to comment on the application in writing. Persons desiring a hearing must file a written request identifying their interest in the proceedings and the reasons for requesting a hearing. Comments and requests for hearing must be received by November 6th, 2017. If deemed appropriate, the commission can determine the matter without a hearing. And I would just like to add that establishing a new tariff schedule, as Commissioner Fedorchak mentioned earlier, does provide an opportunity for other customers to come online with this particular facility, including the communities of Gwinner and Milner and for Sargent and Ransom counties, depending on their location. Julie has done an incredible amount of work on this, so much of which was done prior to my arrival at the commission, and this is just a very strong effort on her part and an important effort on her part as well, because it helps expand gas service to underserved areas of our state. And when you're talking about whether it's a home or an agricultural customer or a commercial customer, there's a significant difference between the cost of propane currently and the cost of natural gas. And it adds up. And, you know, by many measurements right now, the cost of propane is double that of natural gas. So it has a significant economic impact, not only for consumers, but for businesses. And during a point when we talk about low commodity prices on the agricultural side, when you're looking at drying grain down in the fall and other uses for heating, it makes a big difference, without question. So it's a terrific project, and you know, it's just one more step. There are still some other areas of the state that are underserved that are being looked at, but just a great project that I was really happy to see because of the positive ripple effect it has.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, motion is approved.
Commissioner Fedorchak, I understand you have an old friend to add to the agenda.
Yes. Yes, Mr. Chairman, if I could, I'd like to add JF1. It will be a motion on the Coda Access Pipeline Project. I move the commission execute the settlement agreement in Dakota Access LLC, Dakota Access Pipeline Project Siting Application Case Number PU-14-842. I further move the commission cancel the hearing on investigation currently scheduled to begin October 3, 2017, in Dakota Access LLC, Dakota Access Pipeline Project Siting Application Case Number PU-14-842.
Second.
Well, as folks have heard, the discussions have been ongoing with the company on a number of issues related to differences of opinion on some things relating to our siting provisions. We've had three executive sessions on this subject, and we had directed our attorney to work with the company, and they have been doing that to come to some sort of attempt to come to some sort of an agreement on how to settle these issues. Just minutes before the meeting today, we got word from the company that they accepted the conditions that we kind of had spelled out at our last executive session to our attorney to attempt to negotiate with them. And so we therefore didn't need another executive session and could come straight to the meeting today. And I want to propose that we approve the settlement agreement. I'll go through some of the highlights of the agreement. I'm going to skip all of the preliminary information that really sets the stage in the history. I think that's pretty widely understood how we got to where we are, and I'll just go to the provisions of the actual agreement, which I'm going to start with number 10 on page 8. And that is, first of all, there's really four key areas of work here. And the first one is, on number 10, the settlement resolves the issues raised in the order show cause regarding the unanticipated discovery of a cultural resource and subsequent reroute of the project route. And in doing so, first, Dakota Access agrees to develop, in cooperation and collaboration with the North Dakota State Historic Preservation Office and the Commission, an industry reference manual for managing unanticipated discoveries and route changes during construction. The manual shall include a model anticipated discovery plan and unanticipated discovery plan and an explanation of the importance of communication and transparency with the Commission on unanticipated discoveries and route changes during the construction process. This manual will be completed by the end of this year. Second, Dakota Access agrees to distribute the manual to registered pipeline companies in North Dakota. Third, the Dakota Access agrees to conduct training programs on unanticipated discoveries and the Commission's route change process at the 2018 Williston Basin Petroleum Conference and at one other key industry function selected by Dakota Access and approved by the Commission by the end of 2018. And fourth, on this issue, Dakota Access agrees to pay the expenses and costs to bring a speaker of national or international renown to present to SHPO staff in Bismarck on a topic agreed to by SHPO and Dakota Access by the end of 2018. On another issue, jumping down to number 11, to resolve the issues raised in the memorandum prepared by advocacy staff in the investigation, Dakota Access agrees to the following. First, with respect to the potential violations identified by staff regarding route adjustments outside the order show cause, which I just outlined, Dakota Access agrees to produce the manual and provide the training programs above. Those efforts address those issues as well because they were really a question of how are route adjustments supposed to be accomplished during construction. The manual and those training programs will help the industry better understand the process for that. With respect to the issues identified by staff regarding the tree and shrub removal, Dakota Access agrees to a modification of the tree and shrub plan as contained in the certification, and that will modify it to provide for a 3-to-1 replacement for those trees and shrubs removed from the areas identified in the memorandum. The tree and shrub plan shall remain a 2-to-1 replacement for trees and shrubs outside of the areas identified in the memorandum. So in the areas where they went beyond what was spelled out, they're going to replace them 3-to-1, and in the rest of the permitted areas, it remains the 2-to-1. And the company further agrees that it will provide and plant or pay for the planting of 20,000 trees in consultation with various soil conservation districts traversed by the pipeline, and that will be accomplished by December of 2018, end of 2018. And then if they can't get those done by the end of 2018, there's some flexibility here to extend that for another year. We recognize you never know what the planting seasons are going to be like in North Dakota, and we want to allow enough time to have those trees effectively distributed and planted. And then the fourth major area, with respect to the topsoil removal and remediation issues identified in the memorandum, Dakota Access agrees to inspect with the Commission any areas of concern raised by the landowners, so long as those areas aren't areas of dispute with the company, its contractors, agents, representatives, and they aren't in any sort of a legal dispute with them, and as long as the landowners agree to that type of inspection and the testing protocols and related activities on their respective properties. And Dakota Access will agree to pay the inspection costs for any of those types of issues. So really, those are the four main areas of concern outlined in our order show cause and by the staff and in their advocacy staff in their memorandum. And I really think that this settlement agreement is in the best interests of the Commission and the public for a couple reasons. First of all, and most importantly, it addresses the issues at hand and the concerns raised and the harm done in a meaningful and appropriate way, in a very direct way. And secondly, it provides certainty to resolution. And then thirdly, it closes these cases. There's nothing good that results in issues dragging on and getting tangled up indefinitely in legal purgatory. That doesn't do the public or anybody any good. This provides meaningful resolution to these issues, and it does so with certainty, and then it closes the cases. So the issues that the commission had, if I can boil them down to what our big issues were, we weren't looking for the death penalty here. We wanted to have hold the company responsible for fulfilling their obligations and commitments to the citizens. First of all, there was an issue of transparency, and that was related to the order show cause. The company did not harm any of those cultural resources. It's really important to remember that. They did protect them. They avoided them. They engaged the SHPO appropriately. All those resources, all of that work was done correct. Where the miss was with it, the transparency and the communication with the public by notifying us. We're directing or addressing that transparency with the manual, with the training procedures, and efforts to, real significant efforts to help the industry understand why that transparency is important and how it's accomplished. So that's thoroughly done through this settlement. Secondly, on the process for the route changes, again, the manual will be helpful for the industry to explain how this process is supposed to work and how to do it appropriately with the commission. Third, in terms of the tree and shrub removal, going beyond what was provided for in our order, the company is going to be providing a substantial number of trees to address that issue and make sure that more than what was harmed is in fact planted and at the company's cost. And so I think there's a meaningful resolution there. And then in terms of the concerns raised by the any sort of reclamation issues, the way it's spelled out in the settlement agreement is really how the commission has long done this with companies, and it works very well. Really what we do is we look at the reclamation a year or two after the grass and the land has had a chance to recover, and if the landowners have a concern with it, they let us know, or they let the company know, and the company fixes it. That's how it's spelled out in the settlement agreement. That's how we typically do it, and that, quite honestly, is the best way long-term. Deal with it when there's issues arise and deal with it until the issues are settled. And so I'm very comfortable with the way this has all come together. Again, our job is to hold the companies responsible for fulfilling their obligations under the permits that we provide and maintaining their commitments to the public, and this settlement agreement really helps accomplish that and puts these issues to rest so everybody can move on and get on to other things. So before I close, finally, I do want to thank our attorney, Zach Pelham. He has worked tirelessly on this issue for several years now on this case. And he did a really great job on behalf of the commission, and so did Alana, trying to come to terms on this settlement agreement and the advocacy staff as well. It's been a long road. I think we've all learned a lot. And I think the end product is very good for the public. So I'm proud to support this settlement agreement today. Thank you.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
Well, I may reiterate some points, but I would just, one of the questions that I've received quite often as I've been traveling around or even just in the immediate area, and of course not able to answer them because it was an open case, but the question was, a lot of the questions were centered around the monetary value of the settlement and how that equated in terms of dollars. I just want to point out that this really is not as much about the monetary amount as it is about awareness and influencing future behavior. That, to me, is the most critical part of all of this, is that we're communicating clearly as a commission and that companies are following the order that's issued when a facility is put in place or proposed to be put in place. And to reiterate as well, no cultural resources were destroyed. The company did the right thing in terms of noticing that these resources were present, connecting with SHPO, and as Commissioner Fedorchek mentioned earlier, they failed to notify the commission. And this is certainly not an excuse by any stretch, but you also have to turn the hands of time back and think of what was occurring at the time that the pipeline was being put in place. You had an unprecedented protest taking place. The conditions were not safe in many instances, and the construction crews were certainly under duress to get into the work site and to get out of the work site and get the work done. It was not an easy environment in which to operate by any stretch of the imagination. So company did a very good job in getting the pipeline placed and doing it in a responsible manner, so we know that it's going to function properly and be a safe means of moving product from the Bakken oil field to Patoka, Illinois. So with that, you know, at the end of the day, we do have a facility in place now, Dakota Access Pipeline. It has taken an enormous amount of rail cars in terms of shifting how we move crude oil to market. There is a public safety benefit without question from that. And then you have a ripple effect over the course of time. You have the main line in, and that will then lead to more gathering facilities being put in. And at the end of the day, getting trucks off the road in the oil patch is really, really an important public safety issue. You can see it already in terms of just talking to people. I've talked to people over the past, last week I was in Minot and I talked to an administrator at the hospital and I asked him what type of, you know, has he seen a change in terms of injuries and whatnot from traffic accidents in the Bakken? And he said it's been very noticeable in terms of a decrease. So a lot of positive attributes to having this pipeline in place.
I'll just add thoughts on two specific parts of this, and one of them maybe you touched and maybe you didn't, but I'll reemphasize it if you did. The original unanticipated resource discovery that really started kind of the whole case here, I think it's important when something happens like that to kind of look at whatever occurred, did it greatly benefit the company in this case? And I would look at that differently if they had run into an unanticipated cultural resource, not said anything, and just went around it because it was going to save them all this time or going to save anyone knowing about it. But they didn't. We didn't get notified, but they did notify SHPO, and they roped it off carefully. It's not like they just went and dug through it because they thought that no inspector was looking at the time they were going to get away with it. They handled it appropriately, except for they notified one government agency instead of two. And I, if you didn't mention that, I think it needs to be pointed out. Another point in here that I feel good about has to do with the tree and shrub replacements. I like the fact that in those areas that the third-party inspectors had concerns, we're actually going to a 3-to-1 replacement ratio instead of 2-to-1. To me, I mean, the 2-to-1 ratio was kind of a practice that we had here before I came on board. I don't know how old that is. You know, when you're talking about little seedlings, I always assume that the point of the 2-to-1 ratio was the assumption that about half of them are going to die, because that usually seems to be the case. So going to 3-to-1, I think, is beneficial in those areas. The 20,000 additional 2-year-old trees, to me, is a different thing. You know, a 2-year-old tree is going to have a much better success ratio and much more quickly be something that is a resource to the land and pleasant to look at than a seedling. And that's a big deal, and I like the way this is worded in that. It's not just shifting the burden onto probably already strained county natural resource conservation districts where the company just gets to write them a check and say, here, go try and plant all these 20,000 trees. Nor does it give them the opportunity to just run down to the Red River Valley and plant 20,000 trees in parks down there where they'd be much easier to do and have a great success ratio. This requires them to work in consultation with the soil conservation districts in the counties that the pipeline traverses. So I suppose if there's just nowhere to put them, those particular county resource districts, I would think could help them find a place or maybe authorize going elsewhere. But they need to do it in consultation with the affected districts rather than run somewhere completely different that really didn't even have any impact from this project and plant them there because it's easier. So I like the way that's worded. I think it's an important part of the settlement that needed highlighting.
And, you know, just to dovetail on that, I remembered one more thing I wanted to mention. When we talked about, or what I talked earlier about the monetary amount, this approach by the company and what they have agreed to will cost them significantly more than what was originally proposed in terms of a fine, significantly more. So their intentions and actions are certainly good in terms of what they came back with through the settlement process and where we landed.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay. That concludes my portfolio. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I think that was worth the wait. We will stand in recess for some questions from the press, followed by a short break, and then we will reconvene for the administrative portion of the meeting.
Two questions. Just to clarify, the company has agreed to this, or is this something that will be sent to them for consideration?
They've agreed to it.
They've agreed?
We'll be signing it, and then we'll get our signed copy to them for signature.
They've basically verbally agreed to it, I guess.
Zach, how would you characterize the company's agreement at this point? I mean, they haven't signed it because there's just a process of, you know, who signs first, and we got to prove it and get it to them for signature, but there's no...
Right. As you mentioned earlier, this in your statements on this, Commissioner, we learned 15 minutes before 10 o'clock that the final provisions that had been proposed were acceptable to the company. At that point in time, the attorney for the company indicated that they had no issue with those, and then we indicated that we would get this on the agenda for approval. Signatures, I anticipate happening today.
Thank you.
So this is, I guess, basically kind of like a global agreement. I mean, there's no outstanding issues
Correct.
Between the PSC and the Dakota Access at this point.
All the issues that we have today, this addresses all of the issues that we currently have outlined in that memorandum and in the order show cause.
Okay. And I, you know, just going through this briefly, it doesn't look like there's any... you know, formal, like, fine associated with this, like a monetary penalty?
Everything that you see spelled out there is the terms of the settlement.
Okay. But, Brian, you said that, you know, in terms of monetary, that this the provisions of this would end up costing them more than what was originally proposed, and I think that was $15,000?
Before you Correct. Go there was never a fine proposed in any settlement agreement.
Okay.
There wasn't a fine. There was a fine long ago. Right. Proposed by the advocacy staff way back in December. Uh-huh. That's the only fine there ever was discussed.
Right.
Our original settlement suggested a contribution of $15,000 to SHPO.
Okay.
That evolved into what you see here today. And if you take the monetary value of 20,000 trees, a 3-to-1 ratio, the manual, the speaker, the training sessions, that's far more than $15,000.
Yeah, just the time to go out and actually plant these trees.
Mm-hmm.
I was trying to come up with a dollar figure, and this is really an uneducated number, if you will, but I would not be surprised if this would be north of $100,000 to do everything that they say they are going to do. What they came back with, as Commissioner Fedorchuk stated, this has taken on a number of different versions over the course of time.
I think the important thing on that is whatever the dollar value is, the work will benefit the counties traversed by this that were impacted by it. So
that's the beauty of a settlement, is you can actually direct the resolutions to more meaningful initiatives than just a flat-out fine. I mean, a fine would go into the state general fund. There wouldn't be a manual to help the industry understand our terms. There wouldn't be additional trees planted. This, in my opinion, actually addresses the potential harm that was at stake here in a more meaningful way, in a more direct way.
Was there, I guess, as far as, you talked about you didn't want this to kind of be languished in, court proceedings and litigation. Was there a concern that the PSC wouldn't be able to prove out some of the allegations that were leveled against the company?
I wouldn't say that we wouldn't be able to prove them out. I mean, we felt that there was issues that we needed to be addressed and would have been if we hadn't been able to find a more meaningful way to do that. Mm-hmm. So I think we're always, when we've got issues related to the provisions that we have spelled out in our permits that companies are obligated to follow, we'll pursue those. And we did this way. It just wasn't through the courts.
What mechanism do you have to make sure that they do what they're going to say to replace the trees and the brush?
Well, they'll be reporting back to us, I believe, a summary of their work on those issues and what they do. And if they are unable to get them planted, we'll know about it and be hearing from the company on an extension.
It would basically be a breach of contract situation if there is a breach. Not saying there will be. I don't anticipate a breach. I'm sure everything is going to go through here. But to answer your question, it would be a breach of contract.
Will those areas be inspected by the state?
The 3-to-1 inspections, well, our inspections continue through, and on the 3-to-1, and our tree and shrub plan, the company has to follow that through, I believe it's for 5 years, to get a total regrowth of 75%, or is that right, Pat?
Typically, in the same orders, it's 3 years.
3 years. But if it doesn't, 75% growth rate, if they don't meet it in 3 years, then we typically make them go for a few more. So those are monitored, to make sure that the trees are actually growing. Trees and shrubs.
I didn't notice in my quick reading of this, but was there a formal timeline for them to report back on their progress on some of these things?
Well, the trees and shrubs will be monitored through that process.
Okay.
And the reporting back, my assumption is it'll happen. We will hear back if it doesn't happen. We'll assume it has happened.
Okay.
We'll hear back if it doesn't happen by the end of the deadline, because they'll have to have an extension.
Okay. And the other provisions about the training manual and those kind of things?
We'll be involved in that. So
okay.
We'll be working with them on the training manual. We'll be attending the conferences. We'll be following that one directly because we're involved in it.
I think when you consider the visibility of Dakota Access in general and this particular issue, it's never safe to assume anything, but the company has already taken steps to do the right thing through what they offered up with the settlement that they came back and countered with, which was stronger, better. And there's no indication, and I would find it hard to believe that they're not going to follow through on this. So, we've landed in a really good spot.
The reference manual, Is that going to be basically a how-to with existing rules, or is it actually going to set new policy?
No, it will be based on existing rules and requirements. Yep. The laws and rules guiding how the companies are supposed to initiate route changes during construction, after construction, and how you deal with unanticipated discoveries. And then also the SHPO will be involved. There'll be a model unanticipated discovery plan. That's something that helps guide companies when they come across things during construction that might be of cultural significance. What are they supposed to do? They're supposed to develop those plans in advance, so there'll be a model plan like that for companies to use in the future. And really an understanding about who do you notify when you come across these sorts of situations during construction. The process is that we have is good. I mean, there really isn't a need for a change in what we require of companies or how it's done. It's just that there's a lot to understand. There's a lot of moving parts in these construction processes, and it's important for companies and their vendors to understand that process. And I think that's where, if there was a gap, that's where it was in this case.
I have one quick thing on another topic, if that's okay. And it goes back to the power line that is being proposed for the two substations around Fargo. Fargo had a power failure again this morning. Was that reported to Commission A? And B, are you satisfied with the response that XL did to that?
I was not aware of the outage this morning, so I would be hesitant to answer the second part of that in terms of being satisfied. I would have, and I'll have to look. I was in meetings starting at about 7:30, so it's possible that I have an email. I'd have to go back and double check.
Are the companies required to report?
They're not required to report an outage by law, but they also know and are well aware that we'll receive a number of calls. When there is an outage, we may get complaints, and it's difficult for us to adequately answer questions and assist the public and direct them appropriately when we're not aware to begin with that something's occurred.
I was thinking with the agreement or the...
Can I interrupt a minute, Dave?
Sure.
I want to make... I forgot to do announcements earlier, and before you leave, I want to make these because we appreciate the press participating. So if I can just interrupt and do the announcements that I should have made earlier.
That was my best quote, Randy.
Tuesday, September 26th at 8:30, we have a formal hearing on case number PU-17-120, Northern State Power's advanced prudence on 1,550 megawatts of wind. What I really wanted to get out before you leave to make sure everybody realizes our next regular scheduled meeting is not 2 weeks from Wednesday. It is actually on Monday, October 2nd at 1 o'clock, not 10 o'clock. And so keep that in mind. I will also point out then that the following 2 days, October 3rd and October 4th, were when we had our informal hearings for DAPL scheduled. And so those in this motion were canceled now. So I don't know if in the meantime, if there will be discussion of moving our meeting to a Wednesday, which is our more normal routine. I think it was actually on Monday because of the DAPL hearings. So it's just in flux a little bit. Watch the schedule. As of now, it's scheduled for Monday the 2nd at 1 instead of 10. So wanted to make sure
don't
you
want to miss
caught
it.
That. Might have more exciting eligible telecommunication carrier.
There you go.
Did we get through your question?
Sorry about that.
The only thing I was going to ask is because XL has this rider still about power outages, mm-hmm. are they going to be were they required to report these outages anyway because of the rider?
You know what? To be honest, I'd have to go back and double check the language on that. I can get back to you on that. I just want to make sure.
I'm not sure either, to be honest. And it's just been their policy that they do, most of them. And Dave Cedarquist is usually very good about it. So maybe he usually tries to get some good information before he lets us know, so he kind of anticipates what our questions are going to be. So maybe he's still gathering that.
I had one other thing unrelated. On the Otter Tail item today, is the projected increase for, you know, residential and large users, is that, you know, just generally over its entire service area that that would be effective for just certain customers in a certain area?
No, well, it's broken down for the residential customers. I believe the number was $1.23, if I remember right. But that would be for all. That's for an average residential customer, average being using 1,000 kilowatt.
Right. In its service hours. Area or, you know, a customer of.
Right. Yes, it would be across the entire service area. It's not impacted by geography.
Sure. Okay.
Anything else, Alyssa?
No, I'm good. They asked all the questions.
We have a tendency to do that.
Okay, thanks, everybody. We will reconvene at about 11:50 for the administration portion of the meeting, administrative portion of the meeting.